We are ready. Hey, I can't wait to do this. It's a special report on behind the scenes, what's happening with these elections. You know, I came in from Oregon a couple of weeks ago and ran into someone who's doing a grassroots campaign and immediately took the like in the guy, reminded me of a kind of a Lincoln-type character. And he's probably heard that before. He's really running as a populist. And in a place like Oregon, which we all know is like Washington, Oregon, California, we know that there are conservatives out there. It's just that they don't seem to show up in any of the elections. And say what you will about voting anomalies and devices, whatever. I think a lot of it has to do with turnout, has to do with the energy of the base. I want to bring in Mark Thielman, who is running for governor in Oregon as a grassroots candidate. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad this is kind of a last-minute thing, and I know you're busy out there, but, you know, you got primaries. I guess they're voting tomorrow. So give us the lay of the land out there in Oregon for those of us that are the rest of the country. What do we need to know about your state?
Well, two things. Oregon is the next phase. You know, we had Virginia with Glenn Youngkin, and Oregon is the next battleground. So we have a three-way race for governor brewing, in which we have a kind of a more moderate, at least for Oregon, Democrat. She has left the party and now is running as an independent. And then we have, of course, the progressive Democrats who are very far left. And then kind of a huge, kind of a splintered Republican party. At least that's the way it's traditionally been. However, the Republicans are beginning to unify strongly as a result of the really poor leadership in the economic situation, the runaway homelessness and the lack of affordable housing. I mean, I can go on, but there's a lot of issues confronting our state, and people are really feeling the hit here. We were one of the most locked down states in the nation. And that's really when I rose to public prominence, because I kept my school open during the COVID school year, K through 12, which was not popular with our governor. And we went all school year without any cases of COVID traced to the classroom. Not to mention, I took on the state when they had several attempts to close us. And then because I had some political connections, I've done some policy work over the years, I was able to leverage those and take some of the government malfeasance, the way they were lying to us about COVID cases and COVID identifications of cases, et cetera. And that led to a surprise opening of all schools that January. So that was my first round of being thrust out from behind the scenes, kind of a small school superintendent into the fore. And I've been out front ever since. And enough is enough. So I decided to step out and run for governor as a grassroots candidate.
So help me understand something. A lot of our folks out there that are new to this, I mean, we're really engaged, but we got engaged because we just see the country going to pot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks that are like yourself, just folks that normally would be watching the political system, are saying something is terribly dysfunctional and we keep looking for someone to fix it and nobody shows up. And the next thing you know, someone like you comes along. And how did you know that you were being taken seriously, or how did you go about the process of deciding you were going to do more than just keep your school open, you were going to actually run for electoral office? What's the process that makes somebody like you have that awakening?
Well, it really was a result of beating the government. And I did it kind of single-handedly. I know in Oregon, you don't want to fight with a group of people because the way it's so volatile here, so hostile. Anybody who fights with you will be canceled. And canceling, when they came to cancel me, I just didn't react the way most people do. I didn't retreat. I didn't care what kinds of, damage they would do or things, allegations and assaults. And all I did was kept repeating the truth. This is the truth. These are the facts. We're following the science. These are the results of the science. And here is all the support from all our parents. So my school district literally grew almost 500% as a result of COVID, with kids coming into our brick and mortar. And we started a parent focused and limited screen time online program, which grew to 500 kids in the same number of months. And millions of dollars was flowing through this little town in Alsea where the school district was. And we ended up employing almost a third of the town because we had the cash to do it. And we needed the help. And it really, really was a revolution, if you will. And then to have no COVID on top of that, and to lead the charge with setting policies and procedures that worked as the different variants came in and they behaved differently. At every step, we were several steps ahead of the rest of the state. And people appreciate, one, the truth, and two, they appreciate results. And I know our parents did. You know, I took over in 2011 of this little district. It had 117 kids. And then I resigned to run full time for governor when my campaign really took off. And when I resigned, we had 986. So I think that's pretty good growth. And that's a pretty good legacy to give to a small town and a small school district.
You mentioned Governor Youngkin up there in Virginia. So he was able to capitalize on the parents' frustration. And I think to a degree with you in the school and education field, you could see that. Is the Republican base out in Oregon, would you say that, do they for the most part feel apathetic about, well, what difference does it make, you know, or how would you describe the Republican base out there in Oregon? Yeah. I don't know, but I'm curious about that.
Well, again, the Republicans have had 40 years of not winning out here. We've won one state race in almost 40 years. And coincidentally, only when the state went to mail-in balloting did Republicans stop winning. It used to be almost like 60% Republicans. And then after that, it was zero. So and there's a lot of issues, obviously, with mail-in voting and a lot of opportunities for nefarious things. And that has suppressed some of the conservative vote. But not among the grassroots people. We're talking moms and dads of school age kids, middle school, high school in particular, that particular bracket of parents. They are way engaged and heavily thrown in behind campaigns like mine. And the other one is that conservatives are really asking for solutions, and they're starting to speak out in Oregon. It's huge freedom rallies, huge freedom groups here. So it's kind of the same thing that you saw in Virginia. The difference, though, is that in Oregon, you know, the concept of school choice, the concept of parent input, parents were called terrorists in this state. And I know there was some of that in Virginia, but it's statewide here. It's pretty locked down. And I was the only conservative superintendent who was publicly declared. And I stood against that because, you know, eventually you just can't. You can't sweep this stuff under the rug. We have a education system that isn't educating. It's talking about equity and social justice. And as a result, kids are graduating without any skills. And then what did our governor do? She removed all standards of requirement. Kids are not required to prove any skills before graduating, which is,
wow,
it's insane. And parents don't appreciate it. So it is it's been a unifying issue for conservatives here in Oregon, if you can believe that.
That's why I'm saying it's hard to believe, but I know that Oregon is as far experimentally left as you can get, and the state looks like it. I mean, from homelessness to education to mm-hmm. poverty, and the condition of the cities. I mean, it's kind of it's a real eye opener to go to Portland or to the various other cities we've been at and say, wow, this is. You could literally see the evidence of tent cities forming around the community, around the mm-hmm. bridges and highways. And I imagine that there must be a number of citizens to say, this can't continue. It's going to be a three-way race. You're going to have this lady running, I guess, as a moderate.
Yep.
And then you're going to have your traditional total left wing, which is going to be very unpopular this year, I guess, going to the midterms. But what's the Republican field look like? How would you describe that? You got a lot of people running?
Well, there's 19 people on the ballot, if you can believe that. And but of the 19, there's about five of us that are the lion's share of the support out there. And grassroots wise, I'm the only guy. I'm the only one in the top five that, I didn't have a network of millions of dollars. So the to be as competitive as I've been has a lot to do with a variety of things. One, just a huge grassroots team of people. Ironically, about 50% of my 100 and some odd full-time people that are volunteering full-time are former Democrats. I call them recovering Democrats. And it shows you just how serious a lot of these folks are about getting their state back. A lot of them switch parties to vote for me. And you know, it's a humbling thing. At the same time, is it also is an encouraging thing, because I want to deliver for these amazing people who have given up so much to get my campaign to the point where it's been. And to me, it's a, you know, it's a spiritual thing. This is about good and evil. That's what this is about. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm good on the school stuff, but I became famous, and I'll share this with you, and I hope it's well received. Early in my campaign, at one of the early gubernatorial panels, there was 11 of us, and somebody said, well, how can people reach out, Mark, to support your campaign? That was the question we each had to answer. And I got up and I said, the first thing that anyone in this audience who's interested in supporting my campaign can do is pray. And I'll say that again, in Oregon, I said that, is pray. And it went, it was just, it was amazing. The response, the audience just cheered. And so many people, they couldn't believe that in Oregon, a politician, which I'm not, but that a governor candidate would get up and say, pray, it's the most important thing you can do. And please do that first. And that's really come to stigmatize my campaign in a healthy way, because we're a prayerful campaign. We stand up for our values. I'm modeling for people that if we're going to win, we're going to win by being conservative, and we're going to win by not equivocating. And, you know, we say radical things, Lance, like, are you ready? Brace yourself. Children belong to their parents. Radical stuff.
Right. Radical in the sense that I don't think the average citizen out there in Oregon really understands the degree to which the left has really hijacked the political paradigm. I looked at a graph that Elon Musk put out recently on Twitter, and it shows him as a centrist, and it shows the left, well, I guess I'll reverse it for the TV, and the left is going further and further this way, and he never moved, but it's making him look like he's a right winger, and he was laughing about it. And he's saying, look, I didn't move. He said, but now the people on the right are laughing because they see me as one of them, and I never even moved. He says just that's the direction the left has gone. Yep. So you've got independents that I imagine could make a decisive difference, because you got a free thinking state out there. That's why it's so liberal to begin with. But the independents aren't necessarily enchanted with progressive ideology. They just want to have less government and, you know, leave me alone. So this idea of government controlling everything, right on down to your children, mm-hmm. I'm sure doesn't go down well with the independents either, does it?
No, it does not. And, you know, in Oregon, independents, and they call them non-affiliateds here, NAVs, is the largest group of people. They're like 38%. Republicans are just around 30, and Democrats make up some of the difference, and, you know, 33-34%. And so it's the rules of the normal rules of politics in Oregon, with a three-way race and with the rise of NAV affiliation or non-affiliation, if you will. It's changed the whole playing field for politics, and there's a real hunger out there for solution-oriented, truth-telling candidates who are, you know, in my case, able to articulate exactly what I'm going to do to solve homelessness. And here's how we're going to address affordable housing. And it's really changed the flavor of conservative politics in Oregon. So, you know, win, lose, or draw, It's being able to influence the talking point, the direction of politics for both the right and the left, is something that I'm still humbled by and marveling over, because it's so critical. It's gotten people to think and reposition their attitudes and values and hearts around issues that a lot of them thought were lost, but people are really stepping up.
Well, that's remarkable. So we've got a national audience, and the folks that are not in Oregon can nevertheless help in some way by contacting folks that are there. Yep. How can our people get connected with you? And you got, tomorrow's the big day. So what do you want them to do?
Well, they can go to my website is the best way. And it's Mark with a C. C stands for conservative, and it's Mark FOR. So markfororegon.com. Obviously, pray. If praying is so important, pray for this campaign, pray for Oregon, pray for a change, and pray for solutions-oriented leadership, because it's something the state hasn't had for almost 40 years. You know, we were number two in the nation in public education in 1991, and now we're 48th. Wow. You know, that ought to tell you what's at stake here. The very souls of our children are at stake, and I'm here to be a leader. And I've proven that I can beat the government. I've proven I can handle the woke left and come out on top. And so, you know, that kind of thing is important. Obviously, donating. We're taking donations all the way up through till midnight tomorrow. And if people want to help, that's important, because just today we booked last minute media, and those things cost money. So I appreciate that. There's no donation too small. We've had people from all over the country sign into my campaign. I have the highest number of individual donations, almost 2,600 people and counting. And it shows you the power of grassroots.
Right. And you didn't come in with a gigantic pack and all the business and a whole agenda. So you are the people's candidate. That's what I was told from friends of mine that they wanted me to do this interview. And I'm really excited about this. You know, you're going to get a lot of heat if you win.
Yep.
Because they're going to paint you in the ultimate contrast with the Summer of Love crowd. And it's going to be, I think it'll be a very healthy thing, because you seem to handle the pressure well. Mm-hmm. Is your family up to this?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've got two teenage daughters and, well, three teenage daughters, one special needs, but my teenage daughters have been awesome. They were at a flag wave just yesterday, and it was so adorable. They counted the data. We had 22 people give us the bird, and over 450 honks and waves per hour for 3 hours. So you can imagine there's a lot more positive than negative. And it was just so fun to see my girls keeping track, and because they were standing up for their dad. It's just a beautiful thing.
Well, we love what we're hearing, Mark, and we're going to be praying for you. And we believe that there's going to be individuals like you that are hearing the call. Actually, you're in many ways, probably someone would say you're an answer to prayer, because we're looking for those individuals that are not political machines, that are really rising up as citizens and patriots to try to bring a sense of the government back to the people, and representing the people who are the most affected by government policy. And I guess the best news for you is the fact that in Oregon, they're going to keep doing what they've been doing, and what they're doing isn't working. And the misery index is going to drive people to get out there. And we'll be looking forward. When will the results be for the primaries? By tomorrow night, midnight?
Well, we'll have preliminary results tomorrow night. But in Oregon, it's legal to vote up to 8 days after the election. As of last year, they passed this during COVID when nobody was paying attention. So technically, we have to wait another 8 days minimum and to see who the actual winner will be.
Well, we know what that looks like in America. 8 days, you know, you win, and then you hold your breath for 8 days. Oh, look what I found over here, Charlie, another box of ballots. Oh, let me hand these out. Oh, it has Dinesh D'Souza's name on it. Let me put that back. Oh, all right, man. Well, we're cheering for you, brother, and hopefully we'll be able to do some more interviews and get you out there between now and November, so people can understand more about the courage of the populist movement and what it looks like. Thanks again, Mark.
Thank God you, bless Lance. You. Yep, God bless you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Well, there you have it, people, right there from the green. You know, this is in every state. We've got people like this that are rising up at the school board level, at the city council level. David Lane is a friend of mine. He encourages pastors and elders and people that are in church to say, hey, this is your call. You think someone else is going to answer it, look around you. You're it. You never have that moment where you say, why doesn't someone do something? Well, people aren't saying that much anymore, because the answer is, well, you are it. And if you can see the problem and you care about the problem, here's my conclusion. You're probably better qualified to run than the people that are running and getting elected, because sure as anything, they're making a mess of it. So I'll keep you guys informed. We're going to do a follow-up on this interview and see how the results were. And I believe that in every state, we're going to see people just like Mark rising up, answering the call. He's a good guy. I met him literally. I was just out shaking hands, and I was speaking at a rally, and I ran into him, and I thought, you know what, this guy, I'd like to do an interview. And so we made it happen. And that's what I love to do with this audience. Follow through with him. Get in touch with him. Stay in touch with him. I don't think this is the last we're going to hear from him. And I say, God bless all of you for watching this, and share it with your friends. And we'll be back again later on today covering some very powerful news that's breaking out. You know, this thing that's happening in China, most people don't realize this. President Xi is evidently there's some mystery surrounding illness with him. Their economy is in an absolute free fall. They've become like Oregon. They've become infatuated. They're very much like communist China out there in progressive Marxist land in America, where they want this zero COVID policy, which has shut down the economy. So they're killing their own economy in order to make a point. And it's a dumb point because the survivability with the Omicron variant is so obvious that you don't need to be extremists and ideologues can even destroy their own state's economies or their own nation. And China may be in the business of doing something to themselves that sets them back, which gives us a little bit more room to run in the West to recover our balance by November. But I'm going to be back with some of that news tonight. You want to stay tuned on what's happening. God bless you. See you later.